Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah, standing there behind the counter.
Kia ora, listeners. I'm here today with the authors and the publisher slash editor of a brand new book by two Auckland authors, which is called When We Remember to Breathe, with a very revealing subtitle, Mess, Magic, and Mothering. The authors are Renee Liang and Michelle Powles, and the publisher is Magpie Pulp in the person of Lisette Duplessis.
Yeah.
I realize I didn't check with you. Do you pronounce the S on the end of your name?
No, you don't.
No. Duplessis. Yeah. I didn't really like your voice road. So, welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Very pleased to have you today. So I, rather than read a little list that I might have prepared of the achievements of the authors, because I think in this book, the voice of the authors is so important, and they are authors, they are writers, didn't just pick up the pen now to write this book, it's an informative book. So I'm going to quote from the about the authors in the front of the book, because if people go into a bookstore, this is what they'd be doing, they'd be opening the book. And I think it's very apt, and I enjoyed reading them very much. So we've got Michelle Powles. Despite training in law, or perhaps because of it, Michelle has been a dancer, producer, and writer across the globe from India to Bosnia, Brazil to Edinburgh. She is now the mother of two small, loud boys who seem to have inherited her fondness for generating fantastical scenarios, mostly under their beds. Her fiction and nonfiction has been published widely and broadcast for radio in New Zealand and the United Kingdom, and she was New Zealand's 2010 Robert Burns Fellow and has been selected for the 2018 Film Up program. Now, Renee Liang. Renee has spent her whole life unsure of exactly what she is, and she expects to never find out. Renee is a writer, a mother, a sister, a daughter to parents who made the decision in their 30s to emigrate to New Zealand from Hong Kong, a poet, a playwright, a pediatrician, an arts journalist, and a medical researcher. She's written, produced, and toured 7 plays. She's worked with community and organized community-based art initiatives, such as New Kiwi Women Write, and she's a member, congratulations on this one, Renee, was appointed in 2018 a member of the New Zealand Order of Merit.
Thank you.
For services to the arts. I was so pleased when I saw that come through. Renee and I go back to a number of National Poetry Days at Central Library. So, yeah, it was great to see that name come up in lights this year. So, back to us, back to the book, switching from my author blurbs to book blurb. So I thought that, Michelle, as it was your idea to write to the creation of this work, mm-hmm. that you could give us a bit of background as to how the idea came to you.
Well, I was a mother of one, a very small child, and almost a mother of another small child. And I had been reading a lot about parenting and mothering, and I came across this collection of essays from two Canadian poets who weren't talking about parenthood at all. But it was a really lovely back and forth conversation. Unfortunately, I can't remember them, so I can't give them any credit. And then I had previously read Anne Enright's Making Babies book as well and really enjoyed that. And then I spotted on social media that Renee was having her second baby not long after I was having my second baby. And we had worked together on New Zealand Book Month, I think. And I said, hey, I've always wanted to write more about being a mother and having a child, but in a more lyrical, literary way rather than, oh, he rolled over. So what do you think? Do you think we should try and do something? And she, like she would have said, yeah.
That's Renee, yep.
Obviously went, are you mental?
Yeah, I went, I think I went, okay. Not, yeah.
Like, I think you went, are you mental first? And then we both went, absolutely. Yeah, let's do it. So it became something that fed both of us quite quickly on. Mm. Yeah.
It's possibly a newer version for our century of the epistolary novel, of that sort of Charing Cross Road novel. It's email, so it's sort of quicker and more immediate. Mm-hmm. And I think also you can feel in the book this fact that, as everyone always says, letters composed as emails. You were emailing these back and forth, right? I'm not going off on a wrong let me know first before I make an idiot of myself. There is a more of an immediacy. You're not polishing it as you're writing it. I mean, both being writers, you're seeking clarity and you want to know that by the end you've expressed what you wanted to express and well, but it's not, it hasn't been written and rewritten. It's sort of very an immediate expression, as we could say.
I think, although there was a sense that because I was writing to another writer, I felt really free to use kind of a more literary construct. So sometimes we sent poems, which you'll see in the book. And obviously there are actually conversations in the form of play scripts as well, which sometimes occur. So I think we tried to explore quite a lot of the different forms, particularly, I think, I'd probably say the short essay would be a good description of a lot of the passages in the book. They're very tiny. They're often about a page to a page and a half, but they are little essays.
Yeah, so this is that almost like the version of the essay in flash fiction essay, or the crits, as they're sometimes called, little pieces in books that might disconnect, but they stand alone, but they're also part of a larger picture. And so I think this is a really good that you said that, because I did feel that this, what I appreciate about this book was that it avoided being just another parenting book. So I was going to put that to you. So you, Renee, have a really good line in the book, which I loved, which was about parenting books, that a mother who had come to you as a doctor and was asking about the advice in her parenting book, and you said, well, I told her babies can't read, so they don't know what the parenting book says. Was that a conscious thing to make this book not just a parenting book?
Oh, yeah, there are far too many. And I mean, a lot of what my... and with my first baby, I did buy all the parenting books. I think there are about 5 or 6 on my bookshelf still. There was just never time to read them. But when you did, occasionally read a page, you just immediately feel guilty because my baby's not following the rules. Oh, my gosh. Is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with my baby? Do I need to take the baby back and get it fixed? Mm. Oh, whoops, I am the person that you're supposed to take it back to get the baby fixed. So it was one of those things. And then I was very glad... and this is advice I actually give to the parents that come to my clinic now as well, that I didn't take the books off the shelf the second time round. I thought, no, I think I'm just going to learn this baby, get to know my baby, and let him get to know me.
Yeah, the baby's the expert, as they say.
Follow your baby.
Yeah, they're happy to lead, despite being brand new. And you, Michelle, you've got also a line... about advice and how, no, it was one of the subtitles, I think, of one of your pieces, advice and how to ignore it.
Yes. Yeah, because there is kind of a culture, it is quite a white middle class culture as well, we've talked about that before, of so much advice and also so much conflicting advice. And so we weren't setting out to give advice in any form. We were really setting out to create something beautiful and like a memory-making exercise, really. And it was also for us to start with. It wasn't necessarily for a public audience until Lisette came along and said, oh, yes, it's for a public audience. So, yeah, that, I think, adds to that level of intimacy and emotionality that you get within it.
Yeah, that's a really good point to, a really good bridge to bring in. I would really love to hear something about the process of getting the book published and how you met Lisette, or did you already know her? So who took the first steps there and wants to lead off with telling us about that?
Well, Lisette was a friend of a friend of mine, and we had met just because she's like, you guys should meet.
Yeah.
And we did. And then I said, oh, I've got this thing. Do you want to read it? And Lisette went, yes, of course, and enjoyed it and had been pondering starting up Magpie Pulp at the same time, and that kind of led.
Oh, is that right? So yeah. Magpie Pulp is new as well.
Yeah. So I'd been thinking about this idea of crowd publishing books, because I thought I'd had, as an editor, I'd had a lot of wonderful books come my way. I'd had a lot of books come my way that were really good, but I knew that probably in the current climate, publishers might be just a bit cautious. But I knew they were great books that would find an audience. They just needed to be put in front of them. And so when Michelle's book came to me, I saw a perfect example of a beautiful book that would find plenty of willing, loving readers. And I thought, this is a wonderful book to start that first chance of presenting a book to readers in a crowd fund. And personally, the book touched me because I'm also a mum of two young children, and what I thought they'd done perfectly was express all of those moments that I couldn't put into words because I'm not a writer. And I knew that if other mums read it, they would go, oh my God, that is so what that felt like. And that's where it's not preachy at all, because it's just describing real, true moments, and that's what I loved about it. But yeah, and so it's published, and now it's going out into bookstores and libraries and everywhere, which is pretty exciting.
So it's got this wonderful line here. Is this like going to be a series of books? The sisters, we got this.
Yeah, that's another whole big thing, really, actually. Yeah.
And that was one of the things that attracted us to this, the sisters, we got this story.
Yeah. I'm yet to kind of turn that into the next giant branch of things. But Sisters, We Got This is an idea that I had when I'd worked on a book called 200 Women, which was, it's called 200 Women Who Will Change the Way You See the World. And I edited 200 interviews for this. And at the end of it, I came out going, oh my God, these women are incredible. And they are just doing everything they can in their power to make the world better, using whatever their unique talents are. And I thought, well, okay, well, what are my talents? And my talents are creating books and publishing them. So I thought, right, that was kind of my inspiration. And Sisters, We Got This is this idea that if we all did what's in our power, whatever our talents, and it wouldn't matter whether that's something big and grand or small, like helping your neighbour who just needs help with their groceries. You know, if we all did whatever we could within the realities of our lives, we could make a pretty incredible impact. So that's what Sisters, We Got This is. In future, I would like to see a whole collection of books that are Sisters, We Got This for Magpie.
Yeah, and those would definitely be a success. And I was almost stepping over you just then because I was so enthusiastic about recalling how Jacinda was just interviewed about paying the groceries of the woman that found that she got to the checkout and couldn't pay for her groceries.
Yeah.
So she's right up there.
Oh, yeah, she's got this. One. She's definitely got this.
The tone where you were saying, I can't remember the words you used now, but to say that the book was not presenting a perfect motherhood so that other people could identify with it was, you have a great title in one of yours, Michelle, which is The Undomestic Goddess. Mm. So were you quite aware of that, sort of the self-deprecating side to telling a story about motherhood when you're sharing it with people you don't actually have sitting at the table with you?
I guess so. I guess also I am just an undomestic goddess. My poor long-suffering husband likes a tidy house. We were talking about this the other day when Lisette and Renee came over, and they're like, oh, your house is tidy. I'm like, yes, my husband has been home.
Because as well as sharing a correspondence about being pregnant, having a baby and raising our babies, we also managed to share a builder through my house renovations.
And the builder not being Michelle herself, even though she did work on her own building.
That is true. But
that's right.
No, the builder that worked on our house. Yeah. So, yeah.
So the other thing that I really liked, so talking about the self-deprecating side to it, which is not, I do want to put this out there, because there's so many of them already, the sassy memoir often they're American, not necessarily, it's not a prerequisite, that the sassy, a book written for effect, that every line is actually like a stand-up comedian line. This is not a book of stand-up comedy. It's actually very multifaceted. And it's in some ways, it has an air almost of being what you're collaborating on is almost a diary, isn't it? With the memories of a journey. So it's sort of like when people go off on their motorcycles and go through Mongolia and then write the book about it. Only instead of being on motorcycles, you were on a couch breastfeeding. Was there a bit of that component of the getting down the memories, isn't there?
Absolutely, yes. So I think it really helped to know that Michelle was on the other end of the email. It does change the style that you write, because it's another mum who will get it. And so there was a lot of, hey, remember this or remember that, or hey, this is how I'm going, how are you going? And so there is that give and take. But as Michelle was saying, it's just really intimate because it was just between us. And we haven't really changed that for the book. I think it's mostly just a little opening of a correspondence, a secret diary and a correspondence at the same time.
So it was just for you, but at the same time, it was universal enough that you felt at ease with putting it out there, knowing that it would find an audience.
Yeah, I guess because we are both writers, you know, as part of our profession, that was always going, you're always writing, hoping that someone will read, even though in this case, initially it was just Renee and myself. The way that you write when you become a writer, I guess, is you're always hoping that there's a bigger audience. And so when it became clear there was, that was a nice thing to have realized.
Yeah, possibly that's also something that drives people to become writers when they do feel that they have something to express. And they, I'm against this thing of people having to be modest about thinking that they're good at expressing things. I think that, you know, when people talk about ambitious writers or non-ambitious writers, I have this theory that if you've got talent and a way of telling that speaks to people, that you want to do get the widest audience possible. And I can't see that that could be something to, you know, point a finger at. So, yeah, so good for your ambition. Was there an editing process at the end? Did you say, no, maybe this is too personal? Or?
Yeah, we actually, Renee came over to my house a couple of times and we literally lay all of the pages out on the floor and walked around them and changed the order and then took some out and realised where there were some holes and wrote some more work over the next year, I think, as the kids got older.
Yeah. And you list that you're an editor, so yep. Did you do some editing together with the authors here?
She did a lot.
more than some.
Yeah. Oh, it was a very annotated manuscript, and the form is obviously, it feels and reads much more like it was written on purpose, and it wasn't, you know. But at the same time, Lizette didn't really touch the intimacy and some of those revealing moments where perhaps if we'd been writing for consumption, public consumption at the beginning, we probably wouldn't have put that stuff in. Mm. And also we both kind of went to our husbands and was
checked.
Like, we've written this thing about you. Is that okay? And yeah, they got the take.
I was wondering.
I should say, it's beautiful writing. It was beautiful writing. I didn't feel like I had to do much. I felt like they knew what they were trying to say. Sometimes you feel like you're really trying to have to help an author get to what they're trying to get across, whereas in this case, these two knew exactly what they wanted to say and actually expressed it pretty beautifully anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really true. It shows in the book. So I'm remembering a line that you put in, Renee, where you're talking about how what's happening right now are actually becoming memories. You're in the process in some way of making memories. And you say you're aware that someday memories will be only shadows. They'll be but shadows. And I wanted to cheer because I thought she's avoided that. She didn't say golden, which is that sort of elegiac, you know. So I have one of the words that I absolutely, you know, after iconic, another cliche that I just can't stand is the elegiac. And you've really managed to make this not an elegiac book, although it is elegiac, but it's not an elegiac book. Does that make sense?
I guess so. I mean, my kids are aware they're in a book, and they're not actually at the level where they can read it, although that is not that far away. But I think it will be interesting for them to read back and see what it was like, because, of course, this book covers the time before they turned five, or before the oldest child turned five, and so this is beyond their memory. So they're characters in a book that is beyond their memory. So in some ways it's almost a laying down of memories for them as well, because they won't be able to have them themselves.
You talk, Michelle, a lot about, so your children are avid storytellers. You tell them stories and they invent stories. Do they make themselves characters in their stories? Are they?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, their favourite thing is to have made up, like they'll love to have books read to them, but they also love made up stories in bed, and they usually make me include them in their stories, and sometimes when I'm reading books I have to change the characters' names to be their names. I think that's quite a common thing that children do, so that they feel like they're really in there. But it kind of started before this book. I started writing down little things that they would say and sharing them on Facebook, and some of them have ended up in the book. And when I was talking to them about being in this book, they were asking, so what's in the book? I'm like, well, you know, there's snot burgers and all of the things that they would come in, and they were very appreciative of that. being put down in print.
Yeah, no, that's it. It was the keeping it real. I really appreciate that. So when I said about Elijah, what I think that's expressed very well, what I perhaps hope didn't express too badly, which is that it's not an elegy. I didn't see this book as an elegy to motherhood. I saw it about real motherhood. So elegies have always been purified because they're honoring something, and this was not about that. This was about, this is the real way that we live as this is our situation.
Mm. Well, quite often they were Russian at the time. Things were happening or shortly afterwards. Mm. So, I mean, they were, you know, in my, you know, in the book I actually write about how I managed to balance my baby and my boob and the pillow and the computer at the same time so that I was able to write. It's terrible mothering, but, you know, that kind of, that hunger as well, you know, like the, one of the things that I remember being really thankful for with Michelle's suggestion is that you never stop being a writer, not even when you're really tired and you've had no sleep. Like sometimes I'd be like, I'm really tired. I know I've got 2 hours till the next time I wake up, but I'm just going to get this thing down because otherwise it'll go and I want to have it. So it was quite grateful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something you can feel with both of your contributions is that it's not like, oh, I'm having an adventure right now. This could make a good book. But rather, I am a writer, and every situation that I live, I'm seeing the writerly aspects of it or the personal things that I have to express that might be different than someone else's. Isn't that what it sort of is all about? Mm. Did you feel, I noticed you never, there was never, I was waiting for the moment when you were going to terribly disagree on some topic. there was one where there's a bit, oh, I'm trying to remember. Were you pretty much always in agreement?
We do agree about a lot of things, I think, yeah. And that has been something that's been really nice that Renee refers to a lot in the book, is that we weren't good friends before we started this book, and so now we know each other so much better, and so it's a thing that we have created together, and also it's created a friendship, which is something pretty special.
Yeah, and Lizzie, you were saying about how when you were editing, and we used to, the passages that we had, we used to just have our initials at the bottom, so when you first start reading, not in the book, but when you first start reading the manuscript, you couldn't tell who had started writing it.
And no.
And also it's not an you know, alternations all the time. So sometimes towards the end of the book, our voices apparently merged so much that Lizette couldn't tell
whose piece was whose, which was surprising. And then, once we fixed it and put the names at the top, suddenly, but it's interesting how just seeing the name at the top colours your perception as you're reading it.
Yeah, I think there's we could add to the thing that the book is not an elegy of but expresses so well. So we have the non-motherhood elegy, the non-friendship elegy. It's also a book which expresses this friendship, the sharing between two friends. And I'm going to slightly move over. I don't want to lose the chance to, because I loved the two definitions at a certain point each of you offers up a definition of parenting, and I thought maybe we could have each one of you read them. So I put some little orange post-its here in my copy of the book. So we might start with Michelle.
So, a definition of parenting. It is hope and trust and fear and sweat and swearing and messing it up and doubt. It is looking into tiny, huge eyes that are so full of the world you forget to doubt yourself for a moment. It is chasing rainbows till you fall into a giggling, breathless heap, and it is your heart beating so hard in your chest every day that it will surely burst. This is what I am stuck in at the moment. It is extreme, and sometimes it is everything. To breathe a little lighter would be a thing, wouldn't it? Like letting rain come without commenting on it.
That's so lovely. So, I gave a pause there. I hate jumping in on top of things like that. I just think that last line. I'm going to reread that last line.
Sorry.
It's so beautiful. No, you did it beautifully, but because there's this thing, we're on a radio and somebody has to acknowledge it. People wonder why there's a long silence. Did my radio turn off? So I think this is so beautiful. To breathe a little lighter would be a thing, wouldn't it? Like letting rain come without commenting on it. That is so beautiful. Almost Shakespearean. So, Renee.
That's where the title came from.
No pressure. We've got a great one from you as well.
So this is part of a passage about how I fit in all the things that I do. So I'm an arts practitioner, and I'm a doctor, and I'm a mum. And those three jobs mean that I'm, you know, often have to leave my children, go out, do something, maybe even travel for some days and go and do something and come back to them. And of course, I worry about my relationship with my children because, and this is a very common thing that we tackle, you know, the mother guilt thing, you know, like you're not good if you don't look after the other aspects of your life, but you're also not good if you're not there for your children at 100%. And it's this thing that, you know, so many women and men struggle with. Filling the emotional spaces is harder. As I flow from role to role through my day, eddies and pockets of turbulence appear. "What? You're going out again tonight?" the husband says. "I told you 2 weeks ago. My show is on. I have to go." "But you opened last week." I like to be in the foyer as much as possible. "You're going to tell me it's work." "Well, it is work. I'll come straight home as soon as the show finishes," I say, thinking of the conversations about work that I've been planning to have afterwards. He gives me a look. He knows me too well. The children are even more brutal. Leave them for a few days and they'll transfer their snuffly, clingy affections elsewhere. Even if I offer them the ultimate enticement of reading them a book. And when they turn me down, turning their heads away and holding their arms out for someone else, a deep, yawning hole appears in my soul. And I contemplate giving up everything just for the certainty of a hug when I come home. I dance over rocks, trying not to lose balance. I catch rainbows in treacherous waters.
Lovely. Thank you so much. I really appreciated the thing about the balancing and the guilt feelings because mine was always baking. The school, in the primary school, you know, we have to bring the baked food in. And once again, I'm going to buy mine.
It's such a Kiwi thing, eh?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Or automatically, when you give birth, you inherit the ability
to bake
without it going flat, without the proportions coming wrong, you know. Yeah. It's
now, what about good bitches that know how to bake?
Well, that's a very nice segue, isn't it?
Yeah,
so,
nice.
The Good Bitches Baking are a charitable organisation who believe that by giving a small piece of home-baked goodness, it shares a piece of kindness, and they've discovered that it brightens the light in lots of people's lives who are having a bit of a tough time. And I am a good bitch who bakes from the West Auckland branch. And so Lisette had generously offered to give a portion of the book's profits to charity, and I suggested the Good Bitches, and they were very excited about that, of course. So we're actually having our launch. It's going to be a fundraiser for the Good Bitches.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah. With cake tasting, of course.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I'll be there.
It'll be great.
So is this something you're thinking for other books, Lisette, that you'll publish, that there will be a donation to a charity?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah. Magpie Pulp, go for it.
Yeah. So the 1st of May at the Tannery with Renee Lyons, the comedian, writer, and Emma Espiner. Help me out here. Tanya Page and Sia Trockenham will be on the panel talking all things mess, magic and mothering.
Oh, fantastic. And then again at the Writers Festival.
Yes. Yeah, we have lots of events. So Michelle is going to be on a panel.
Yeah, I'll be talking about A Very Modern Diary, which segues nicely into your other piece. Yeah, about how we create memories in a literary way in the modern day.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was trying to say this whole time, so you can see why you're at the Writers' Festival and I'm not. And you, Renee?
And later that Friday, I'll be on Lawn Street.
Oh, you're on the Lawn Street?
Yes.
Crawl, but it's got another name. What's it called?
It's
Lawn Street.
Yeah,
walk.
Literary on Lawn or something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I'll be one of a bunch of writers being given writing exercises, which I then have to do in public. I have no idea how that's going to go, but it's going to be fun and potentially embarrassing, which is why I said yes.
Yeah,
I mean, hey, you know, I've already embarrassed myself lots of times, so what's one more time?
I think the word we need to use there is surprising. It's going to be surprising. We're going to see what other facets Renee pulls out.
Yeah, and then on Saturday I'll get to read an extract of the book as well.
Oh, fantastic. So. I wish we could pull out more facets. Unfortunately, I'm seeing our clock there saying 29 minutes, so we have to wrap up. So thank you all very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And the book is When We Remember to Breathe, Mess, Magic, and Mothering. Ka kite anō.
was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.